Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. Everything you need to know. It's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your host, Alex and Sean. We don't sound very happy today because we're not. We're just recording this after the third Cubs game of the season. We have a lot to talk about.
When you just said that sentence, we just walked another three batters.
But before we get into our anger and aggression that we are going to take out, let's thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The Ice Hogs are still in a playoff push, so go support the team. Head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Dallum Swirsky Sports sent you. Oh, Alex, I know right where you want to start.
Yes, and look, I am sitting here saying just a few days ago how I wasn't going to overreact to anything good or bad that we've seen from the Cubs in this first series against a lowly Rangers team that's probably going to finish last this year. But here we are. Pitching's been awful. I could go into so many details, and we probably will, but wow, the pitching was awful. Awful, awful, awful. And what really stinks about it is that two really good offensive efforts go by the boards, especially today. It's almost irrelevant now. You had several leads you blew.
Yeah, it has not been so. You know, we left on an all right note on that first game. All right, the Cubs are looking good. We're expecting to beat this team, but you know, slow start came on strong. Very happy. We get a day off, catch some other baseball around the league, and then we get these two abysmal efforts from the pitching staff.
And here's the thing. It's the same movie every inning, or the same two movies. It's a leadoff walk, bad things happen, or it's the classic get two quick outs, look like you're going to cruise through this inning, and then everything just hits the floor after that. How many walks did we have the past two games? Because I know we walked 12 guys in that middle game. And there's a lot to go in with that.
There was 12.
But so much of this is beating yourself.
Yeah, there was 12 in the middle game and then the 6 today.
Yeah, that's 18 in two games. It's not a recipe for success. Now,
success was the first game when you walked two.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? John Lester, he threw a typical John Lester game this day and age. You're not going to see him beat you with stuff. You're going to see a lot of fly balls. You're going to see, you know, solid command, hopefully, which, you know, he had. But you're not going to see anything dominating, nothing particularly special, nothing that you would frame the box score and put it on a wall. But he got the job done. That's the thing.
He got the job done. Other than one bad, really bad at bat, he got the job done. He really got the job done. I mean, you look at the statistics of it. four hits, two walks, three strikeouts in six innings. I take that. I mean, granted, he gave up the home run, mm-hmm. But other than that, he was what you expect from, you know, your ace of your staff. And stuff or no stuff, he did get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. And you didn't really need the bullpen to be great because you're up by, what, 10 runs, 8 runs whenever he left the game. I mean, it was eventually 12-2, but when he left the game, you were up at least 8, so it's not like the pressure was on. And you saw who pitched in that game. I know Montgomery got the final out. Pedro Strop got the first two outs.
Big Randy was the first.
Yeah, Randy Rosario.
Yeah, he got two strikeouts in one inning. Brock went in for an inning. Strop went in for two-thirds, and Montgomery went in for a third.
Right. So there you go. They looked good, but they weren't in a pressure situation.
No, it's always easier to pitch when you're up by, you know, 8 runs, 10 runs.
Right. Last night, well, it was a roller coaster since the beginning, but you had the lead early. You scored 3 runs in the first, and it looked like, okay, you could potentially run away with this game early. It was Yu Darvish's first start. Now, I did not expect Yu Darvish to be on his top game, his first start since last May, but I wanted a little better. Now,
but you weren't also expecting him to turn into Tyler Chatwood either.
No, but you know, here's the thing. Here is the thing. He was not missing by a lot. And this is a common theme, which I'm going to get into. What really worried me was that the velocity was not there. The movement was on the breaking pitches, but the fastball velocity, you saw him hit 93, 94, maybe once or twice, but then it was a lot of high 80s. And you could tell that he wasn't trusting himself with that. And that's why you pitch around the corners. And the Rangers just stood there. They stood there and just let him go by. They weren't going to chase anything.
And it's smart baseball. Smart baseball. And, you know, Darvish, you know, for some reason, we all had hope that he was going to come back and, you know, lead this team, not lead this team, but give some sort of redemption to and help this team and be like a free agent that we didn't actually sign this offseason when he comes back. And he pitched 2 2/3 innings and gave up 3 runs, 7 walks, and a home run.
Yeah, and that home run came on the fastball, which, again, it was up and it was not. He could throw that same pitch and get a swing and miss if it were probably 5-6 miles faster. Again, the velocity was down. Therefore, it got crushed. But even so, he left the game. Jose Quintana comes in, and you know what? I think I got to give him a lot of credit because he struck out a bunch of guys. Those 2 runs he gave up, part of it was because Bodie had that low throw to Anthony Rizzo. If he makes that throw, they get out of that inning unscathed. And Jose Quintana hasn't pitched in that situation since like his rookie year with the White Sox. So I give him a lot of credit for putting the performance he did together that night. And then Carl Edwards Jr. came in and did not go well at all.
Yeah, we talked, you know, there was the old saying, you know, good Jay and bad Jay. And that totally applies to Carl Edwards. And it was bad Carl
Edwards.
And it
all started because he had the guy 0-2. He had Elvis Andrews, who killed us in this series. He had Elvis Andrews 0-2. He hits a slow chopper that somehow had eyes and found a hole up the middle of the infield. And then everything just went to crap. And
I can't even be mad at Elvis Andrews because his walk-up music is Baby Shark.
See, some people have that as a reason to be mad at him.
Hmm. those people are probably serial killers.
Wow. Wow.
Of all the children's songs that I'm forced to listen to on a regular basis, Baby Shark is far and away the least obnoxious, and I can appreciate if he's probably got a child, and so good for him for putting that up there. But
there's definitely worse out there.
Yeah, no offense, Ben Zobrist having his wife sing Benny and the Jets. Boom.
It's distinct.
I don't know why my wife is not an angry person, but it makes her infuriated when she hears it. I don't know why. It's just like, I don't know if you've ever watched Seinfeld. Kramer hears that one lady's voice on TV, he starts having like a epileptic fit.
Yes.
My wife is kind of like that with an anger fit when she hears Ben Zobrist's wife sing Benny and the Jets.
That's funny. That's really funny. You know what you should do for her as a gag gift one time? Give her like a CD and say like, oh, it's some romantic song that somebody wrote about us. She puts it in. Benny! Just see her just convulse.
No, when she's sleeping, change her ringtone for when I call to that song. So every time I call, it just pops up.
Well, see, if you do that, you are probably no longer going to be on this planet when you get home.
The things we do to anger the people in our lives.
Oh yes, we go to pretty crazy lengths to do that. But back to the Cubs, Carl Edwards Jr., clearly he didn't have it. Joey Gallo got a fastball 93 just right over the middle. It was asking to be crushed, and it was. Oh, that was a deflating loss, but I thought, okay, if they could just rebound today, then I could put that loss behind them. They jump out to a 4-0 lead. It looks like they're about to run away with this thing. And then Delino DeShields, after several guys walked, one pitch should have ended the inning, but Old Blue behind the plate didn't decide to call it. But you were still in that situation, and you still face the bottom of the order. You faced a light hitting catcher in Jeff Mathis, and you still try to pitch around him, and that leads to a grand slam by Delino DeShields. And Cole Hamels was looking pretty good his first few innings, and then again it all unravels.
That pitch before the home run should have been an out, or made the out for DeShields. It was a strike on the corner. But wasn't called. But you can't serve up a meatball with the bases loaded. And
no,
Cole Hamels has been around the league long enough, and he threw a bad pitch, got burned in a bad, bad situation. And I was trying to put my daughter down for a nap, and I'm like, hold on a minute, I just want to see the Cubs make this out. And then I saw the pitch before, and I was like, oh, man, I hope this doesn't come back to bite us. And there's the spicy meatball. Oof. And I'm like, crap. I'm just going to go put her down. I can't even watch this ball go all the way out. I was disgusted.
Yep. Then they come back and they score a bunch of runs. As again, this offense has been great. And then... Yeah. Boom.
You know, that's the thing, is the last inning, that fly ball that I forget who, was that Gallo that scored in the ninth?
Yes.
So that fly ball, first I thought it was out.
So
it
did
didn't
I.
go out. And then I'm like, oh crap, he's going to drop this. And that's part of the thing, is when you put non-outfielders out in the outfield, sometimes you have plays like that. If you had a legitimate center fielder, Albert Almora makes that catch 10 out of 10 times.
Oh, absolutely. He puts that in his back pocket. Now, The other thing I wanted to mention was in the seventh inning, you have two outs and nobody on. You look like you're about to move along with the two-run lead. And then everything just went to crap again. And as Jubal Cabrera, another has-been who has just killed us this series, hits one off the freaking foul pole. You had a go-ahead home run hit by them off the foul pole, and then you lose on a wild pitch. It was just, it was so fitting for this series. It really was. And you, do you know how excited I would be to talk about this offense had they won at least two or three? Do you know how excited I would be right now to talk about it? It's almost like I don't even want to talk about it. And I know what the listeners are probably thinking. You guys are overreacting to the first series of a very long season. And that may be so. That may be so. But what elevates the frustration here is that we are seeing the exact problems we feared in this offseason. Everything we were afraid of happening happened in that series against a bad team. Look at what the Brewers are doing. Look at what the Cardinals have now in Paul Goldschmidt. Look at the freaking Dodgers. Are we going to get better when we play them? I sure hope so.
Look at what Christian Yelich is doing.
It's historical. It's crazy.
Remember when we said Christian Yelich is going to revert back to the mean a little bit and come back to reality? Yeah. Yeah. We're dumb. So, I mean, this is what this pitching. I mean, here's why. You know, I'm not talking to you, Alex. I'm talking to the people out there in the ether. The reason we're upset is if we were playing some team with an awesome batting lineup and they were scoring runs, it would suck. But you could be like, well, you know what? A really good hitting lineup got the better of us. But we are facing a team that's bad. And this is what they did to us. What is going to happen when we go and face Atlanta or we go face Milwaukee in a couple of days?
Right.
What do you think Christian Yelich is going to do when we throw meatballs down the middle at 85 miles an hour?
Yeah, that's why. I mean, look, if they get it together and they perform better, then we can look back at this and say, okay, it was a bad start. But right now, are we writing off the season? No, we're not. We're not. I'm the one who tries to keep preaching, it's a long season, it's a long season. It's just, we see the concerning trends, and that's what elevates it.
It's an extremely long season, and this is just a blip. But the problem is that when we anticipate a very good likelihood of an issue to arise, and that issue arises in by the second game of a 162 game season, it's a cause for concern.
Right. Now,
I mean, in addition to that, is a guy that we're like, okay, well, in a very questionable bullpen, at least we've got a rock in Pedro Strop. Pedro Strop has not looked good.
It's probably that injury. That's the thing. He missed a lot of time with the injury. I mean, right now, the only reliever I could point to who's been pretty flawless is Steve Cishek. You're going to rely on just Steve Cishek? You need other guys to come in. And you look at Mike Montgomery today. He's the one who gave up the go-ahead home run in the seventh inning. You got to worry about him because, remember, he had shoulder problems throughout all of spring training. It's pretty easy to question if he's 100% right now.
And, you know, I saw a lot of people angry of why Quintana went in when he did. And I don't care about that. Is they've got a bunch of days off at the beginning of the season, just the way the schedule goes. So it's, you know, he wasn't scheduled to start anyway.
And he was awful in Atlanta against Atlanta last year. So
yeah, so no worries about that. You put him in. It's much better to put him in than Chatwood or Montgomery, who, you know, because of some shoulder issues, hadn't stretched out at all and was not prepared to do long innings. So, you know, the good news is that we got Hendricks going next. And over the last 2 years, when we've needed somebody from the starting rotation to step up and halt a slump and give some good solid innings, it's been Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, I think this is a good opportunity for Kyle Hendricks, who just got that nice extension, probably the starter I trust most right now, to go out there and just give us 6-7 strong innings. The Atlanta Braves right now, their pitching has struggled because they have some injuries themselves. So you hope that this offensive trend keeps going and they score a lot of runs, and Kyle Hendricks, he gives us a good outing. You know, of course, you also have to worry is, as good as Kyle Hendricks is and as overall consistent as he is, he tends to be a little bit of a slow starter, but I still trust him more than a lot of guys on the staff right now. And you look at the staff and you could look at a lot of the problems as saying, well, this person, Montgomery's had shoulder issues. Pedro Strop has had the hamstring issue. Brad Brock has had the mono issue. Right now they signed Xavier Cedeño. He's sidelined. Your closer, your most important pitcher, is sidelined. That's a rough spot to be on. Yu Darvish is coming off an injury from last year. It's a tough situation to be in, and you just wish the Cubs would have done more to give them more reliable pitching depth, because right now it just isn't there with the injuries and just with what's on the roster right now and where they are in their careers. Look, I thought Cole Hamels today, outside that one inning, looked pretty good, but, you know, a few calls didn't go your way, but you still kind of pitched scared, and it ultimately cost you. Yu Darvish, we'll wait and see. I liked what I saw from Quintana, so you hope that as guys get healthier and maybe some guys come up, maybe Mekas comes up or Maples continues to impress and gives you some help, but it's just right now you look at it and you're saying there's so many question marks and so many people you don't trust at the moment because of injuries or whatever. So this makes it so much harder.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just going to keep saying this because it's not my money and I don't care, is maybe it would be nice to sign a certain star future Hall of Fame reliever who's still unemployed before maybe you're the team that beat you in the division last year, who lost their closer to Tommy John surgery, signs him and bolsters their bullpen. I don't know. It's just a thing.
Now, this certain Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famer you're talking about, he happens to be a free agent, yes?
Yeah, he is. He's a free agent.
And he's pretty good at pitching, yes?
Yeah, I mean, they've got the plaque ready to go for the Hall of Fame.
And said guy could close games and continue to close games and have Brandon Morrow come back as reliable depth, giving you even more reliable depth in the end, yes?
Yeah, to give you three high leverage guys in your bullpen.
Well, I don't see any way that we can't at least consider it. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I was just got wind of something. The Chicago Cubs official credit card was used at, I think it was Kohl's, they were trying to buy a pair of trousers for Pat Hughes, but it said card denied.
Wonk, wonk.
Sounds like they don't have money.
They do. They just don't want to spend it.
This was a great sequence, by the way.
I know. So, I mean, let me just say is the Ricketts family is not eating ramen noodles right now.
No, I don't. I know.
Like they're not going to.
They're eating golden crusted ramen noodles.
Yeah, they're not eating top ramen with the, the cardboard noodles and dipped in the hot water where they get 10 packs for a dollar. They're not eating that. Their lifestyle is not affected. So when they say we don't have money, they totes have money. They just don't want to spend the money.
Right. You want to hear something really frustrating? You want me to make it more frustrating?
Oh, of course.
Here's what the Cubs offense slashed in that series that they lost 2 of 3 of. 342, 430, 570. And as a team, they had a 1,000 OPS. They had 28 total runs, 39 hits, and they walked 18 times. And they lost 2 of 3. That's what makes this really frustrating. Yep. Mm-hmm. Hey, but I got good news.
You saved 20% on your car insurance?
I wish. The Yankees lost 2 of 3 to the Orioles. The Astros lost 3 of 4 to the Rays. The Red Sox lost to the Mariners. Does that make you feel any better?
No, not really.
Okay.
It is funny, though, to see the Yankees lose to the Orioles because
at home.
Did you look at the Orioles roster?
I did, and I knew maybe 3-4 names.
Yeah, it was brutal how few people I knew their names. And I was like, wow. And I don't know. I feel bad. I grew up, my favorite player, I've said this before, was always Cal Ripken. So they're kind of like my closet American League team. And just to see how brutally bad that team is. But then when they beat the Yankees 2 out of 3, all right, thumbs up. Thumbs up, you young kids. I could get behind
that. Congrats to former Cub Brandon Howe.
Yeah, I kind of want to get out to Baltimore this year. Not really to Baltimore, but to go to Camden Yards. I don't know if you've been to Camden Yards, but it's a nice place to catch a game.
Oh, I want to go so bad. If I had the choice to see one MLB stadium anywhere, just right now, snap of a finger, I'm there, it would be Camden Yards.
Yeah, I mean, historic-wise, you're like, oh, okay, well, I would go to, Fenway. But Fenway's kind of dumpy. It's nothing impressive. It's very Wrigley-ish where it's in the middle of a neighborhood.
Right.
But yeah, it's okay. I've never been to Yankee. The Mets new stadium's all right. Phillies is all right. I kind of like that one. But Camden Yards is real nice.
And it kind of turned the tide away from the cookie cutter multi-purpose stadiums back to more of a classic look, which is really good.
Yeah. And then you got the Tiger Stadium, which actually is kind of nice, except it is so tacky looking.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything really wrong. I haven't been there, just looking at it. I don't think there's anything really wrong with it, but there's nothing really about it that says, holy crap, this is a place I must go to.
Yeah. But yeah, the Cubs, no bueno, no bueno. And I know this is, it seems like it's an overreaction to what we're seeing, but it's, if we were like, we don't see any flaws in, all right, let's say if we would have gone into the season saying, man, the question marks are all on the offense, this pitching roster, the starters and the bullpen are solid, thumbs up. And this would have happened, we wouldn't have been upset. I'm sorry, we would have been upset, but we wouldn't have had the same level of upsetness. I don't think it's the fact that we knew that this was what we were going to get from the pitching, and it's exactly what we got, and it was not addressed properly in the offseason.
No, it was not. I wish it was. Yeah. We're just going to have to wait and see over these next two. Right now, I don't think I've ever dreaded a Milwaukee series more than I ever have in my life. But
I never thought we would get to that point either.
I know. That's a crazy thing.
Like, yeah, April of 2019, you're going to be scared of playing the Milwaukee Brewers. Okay, yeah, let me be scared of the Brewers. And you're like, damn it. Like, I don't want to watch them play the Brewers.
Right. I would have laughed at that 2-3 years ago. Now it's like, honestly, I think they are a bigger threat right now than the Cardinals. They dispatched of them pretty easily. Now the Cardinals probably have the best player in Paul Goldschmidt, but you look at what Christian Yelich did, like you said, and it doesn't look like anything's changed with the Brewers so far. Again, it's only 4 games in. I get that. But right now, they're playing like they were at the end of last year, confident and just ready to take on the world and finding ways to win, whether it's some crazy play or some clutch home run by Christian Yelich. Did you see the Lorenzo Cain robbery on opening day?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
did you see what Christian Yelich's OPS is?
Do I want to know?
What would you consider a really, really good OPS?
Well, if we're talking like small sample size where it's ridiculous, I'd say something over 2.
It is well over 2,000. It's like 2,500. I mean, it's a small sample size, but still, considering the last season that he had, and then just be like, oh yeah, let me jump right into against the Cardinals and have a 2,500 OPS. You're like, what the hell does this guy eat for breakfast?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure his Wheaties are packed with like protein jerky or something. I don't. Every fly ball he hits goes out of the park. Have you seen his fly ball ratio? Home run fly ball ratio?
It's ridiculous.
It's Barry Bonds. Only Barry Bonds does that stuff.
Wait, only Barry Bonds when he was his juicing so much that his head looked like it was, out of Mars or something. You look like Mars Attacks. it's unreal. And this is a slight tangent here. I mean, I guess by slight, I mean total tangent. Is I still have the TV on from after the Cubs game, and poker is on, and I like to play poker. But I don't understand watching poker on television. And this is not a knock. There are people out there, that are listening. If you like watching poker, can you explain to me like what I'm missing when I'm watching this? Because I don't get it. Watching golf, watching poker, I don't get it.
I mean, I get watching golf, but I've never actually sat down and watched poker. But I feel like there's a very like almost... I don't want to say cult-like because I don't want to make it sound like a cult, but you know what I mean? Like a small group of just really passionate poker people that look forward to every poker tournament that's on TV, and they're live tweeting it on Twitter. Like there's some secret hashtag, and there's just this small community that all just gets together online and talks about the poker tournament.
It's kind of like bowling. Like I love to bowl. Bowling is fun.
Oh, I love bowling.
But bowling on television, like I'm like, why is this on? Why do they have this on television?
They have anything.
It's not a knock. I just don't get it. There's a whole lot of television that I don't understand. It's clearly not marketed to me. But I'm just bringing this one up because it's still on the television and I can't reach the remote to change it.
It's on CSN, huh? Or NBC Sportsnet. I still call it
CSN. Yeah, it's on CSN. Comcast Sportsnet Chicago.
Hey, they're showing their cards just like Cubs relievers showed their pitches and they got crushed. Here's the thing I really wanted to talk about with the pitching. It's something that we have seen going back to last year, and this is why my concerns are greater than, oh, it's just three games. We've walked a lot of batters, yes?
A whole lot.
Right. What are you noticing about this? Are you thinking the same way I'm thinking, or are you noticing what I am noticing? Is that these pitches, these walks, are not the result of guys just throwing it 10 feet above the catcher's head or into the other dugout. It's because they just nibble. It's not just one guy. We saw it today. We saw it yesterday with multiple guys. The Cole Hamels inning where everything went to crap. Nibble, 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 nibble. Bad hitter. Mathis up. Nibble, 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 nibble. Yesterday, nibble, 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 nibble. All of last year, you look at those outings that Jose Quintana had that weren't good. Why did Jose Quintana struggle in some of those games last year, Sean?
Nibble, nibble.
Nibble, nibble. Exactly. And
the funny part is if you listen to them talk going into spring training, during spring training, and then even now, like, we're going to attack the strike zone. No, you're not. You're not attacking anything.
You're consistently nibbling on the corner. And you know why the Rangers lay off a lot of those? Because they did their homework. They did their scouting. They know that's what's coming to them.
They've got a better caliber of nerd than we do.
That guy throws balls on the outside corner. Just like Captain Kirk used to throw punches on the outside corner of that one creature in episode 58.
Don't like it. I don't listen to no nerds. I just beat them up, put them in the locker. Go back to my chaw. Listen up, nerd. I'm a lasso you and drag you behind Buttercup.
You cannot beat me with Buttercup as I have the Thug of Mordor on my side.
I'm going to shove that 12-sided dice up where the sun don't shine.
Ew.
In my chaw.
Ew. But you get my overall point, yes?
It's just incredibly frustrating. We all know what's... I mean, I don't know what they know. We all seem to notice what is wrong. And it's like watching a train wreck in slow motion. You know what's going to happen. And you know what the result is going to be. And you're watching it happen. And then it happens and you're like... you're mad, but you can't even like... It's like be irate. You're just like... You just... Because you saw it coming. You knew it was coming. It's like to watch, a certain former Bears kicker hit the upright in a playoff game. And you're like, you keep watching it and you know it's going to happen. And you're just like, you can't be mad anymore. You're just like, you're just frustrated and tired.
Yeah. I mean, when they took the lead 8-5, did you sit there and honestly say 8 runs were going to be enough for them to win today?
Oh, I knew that. I knew there was not going to be an 8-run winner. There was going to be a lot more runs that needed to be scored.
And let's just pray that part of the struggles in this first series was partially due to the fact that the Rangers ballpark is very hitter friendly. It is not a great place for pitchers to play, but still, the approach has to be better. You got to attack more. You got to stop nibbling so much. And when you nibble like that, you're only missing by a few inches. But if you do your scouting and you know to lay off, then you're either going to have long at-bats, you're going to draw walks, or you're going to force the pitcher to lay it over the heart of the plate. And that's exactly what happened today. And that's exactly what we saw a lot of last year when Cubs got in trouble. Nibble, 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 boom, or nibble, 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 take your base. You have a great defense around you. Look at what John Lester did. He attacked, he pitched to his defense, good things happened.
Yeah, Nets is, you know, don't give them anything solid to hit. Make, but throw things that they're either going to hit on the ground, let your good defense be take advantage, or, you know, hit lazy fly balls. Don't let them hit line drive. Don't let them hit home runs. Don't walk guys. If you're going to give up a home run, you know what? Giving up a solo shot doesn't kill you. Giving up a grand slam, not only is that just four runs just right there, but that is a brutal thing to walk away from when you give up a grand slam.
Right. The last thing you want to do is beat yourself. And the Cubs beat themselves the last two games. You throw it in there, you try to attack, you put good movement on your pitches, you execute well. And you know what? Sometimes you just get beat. Look at what Javier Baez did on opening day when he hit the two home runs. Again, if the Cubs would have won more than one game in the series, this is probably what we'd be talking about more. Javi Baez being one of them. But Mike Minor threw a beautiful 0-2 curve to Baez. He went down and he just got it. That was not a bad pitch at all. Sometimes you just get beat. And you know what? When you get beat, you get beat. But it's when you keep handing it to them is where the frustration and the problems arise. Look, if Jeff Mathis would have hit a rocket down the line, if Cole Hamels was just trying to attack and give him his best stuff, it's still frustrating as heck, but at least you're not nibbling to him and walking him and setting up the grand slam. That's the thing with this Cubs staff. This staff is not going to miss a lot of bats. Let's be real. John Lester's not going to record a lot of strikeouts. Kyle Hendricks lives on the corners, but that's his MO. He does that in such a great way. He's his own entity. But is he going to strike out a lot of guys? No. Jose Quintana, his strikeout numbers aren't great, but they're certainly not anywhere near Max Scherzer, Strasburg, Kershaw, or any of those guys. If Yu Darvish finally does come around, then yeah, he will strike out guys. But, you know, until he comes around, that's a big question mark there. You look at the bullpen. A lot of those guys aren't flamethrowers that are going to blow their stuff right by hitters. They got to be more aggressive. I know it's hard, but just nibbling around the corners is, I think, the main reason that you see a lot of that is because they don't trust their stuff and getting a lot of swings and misses.
Yeah,
at
absolutely.
Least the case with some of them. Does any of what I said make sense? I mean, it's going to take some adjusting, and hopefully it will. I'm certainly not writing anything off, but I can't help but be a bit concerned about the trend of the pitching, because this is just something we were all afraid of.
And I'm just going to try to stay calm, because, you know, this could turn around, and they could go in there and take two or three from the Braves, and take two or three from the Brewers and be right in first place and, you know, questions answered. But the fact that the first opportunity they had to prove us wrong, they proved us right.
Mm-hmm. At least they're proving us right with the offense.
Yeah, that's good to see the you know, the improvement and open, like, the offense just open up and not just be the Javi Baez show. To see good swings from Chris Bryan, good swings from Kyle Schwarber. Like, that's good to see. This team is built to score a lot of runs. So hopefully we don't need the pitching staff to be all aces. If we can score that many runs, just keep the walks down, keep the balls in the park.
Right. Now, if we're looking at just the offense, just because I got to talk about them really quick. Here is my breakup of it. Chris Bryant is doing great. Anthony Rizzo, today he had an absolute bomb. He's off to a decent start. He doesn't have a lot of hits, but, you know, more good at bats. Kyle Schwarber is absolutely killing it. Jason Hayward is doing nice. Daniel Descalso had a great game. Wilson Contreras has been mashing the ball in the first two games. Victor Caratini got on base a few times. Ben Zobrist. Albert Almora. They're all doing something. There's not one hitter you look at and say, through the first few games, they've been crap. They've all done something. So that's nice.
Yeah, that's it's great to see the Cubs hitters doing something, because last year, most of them did nothing.
Yeah.
Other team in town, the White Sox, have not looked very good, but there's some things to be excited about.
Absolutely.
I think Eloy got his first hit, and he is struggling, but we all saw the numbers he put up in the minor leagues last year, and that's not a fluke. This kid can hit, and it might take him a couple seasons to get into the swing of things, but that kid can hit.
You can't expect him to be mashing right off the bat at age 22.
No, but you know, a guy that people were ready to write off last year in Yoan Moncada looks great. He looks fantastic.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And that's why you got to be patient with these guys. He gets off to a real good start that could give you a lot of confidence. You see the approach is nice. You got to be happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday he didn't strike out at all. In five at-bats, didn't strike out.
And he had a home run.
Yeah. He didn't strike out until the third game of the season. He had two strikeouts, but he's batting .462 with a 1.269 OPS. So, I mean, again, small sample size, but this is what you were looking for, is just signs of improvement, grow on things. Young players, the thing with young players is they've got talent. You know, we can see that. That's why they came up to the majors. Baseball is a really long season, and you have highs and you have lows. And the best players is they don't have long periods of lows. They can transition out of them to get back to a good spot. And that's what differentiates a quality veteran from a quality young player, is that the young player sometimes just has long periods of struggling. And Yoan Moncada had that last year. And he still got things that he needs to work on, but is in this small sample size, he looks really good. And so you know he can play in this league. Like, that's the thing. You know this kid can play in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he was a two-war player last year, even with the struggles. So,
yeah, even though he struck out 8 million times last year, he was, you know, a solid player. And the other thing is, another guy that everybody was ready to write off, Lucas Giolito, had a good game today.
Brought a no-hitter into the seventh, yes.
Yeah, he did. He ended up, that seventh inning was a little rough one for him, but 8 strikeouts, 1 walk, 6 2/3 innings of 2-run game. If a guy that you were ready to write off and, you know, have him ride into the sunset, if he's going to give you those kind of outings every 5 days, you're going to take that.
Absolutely. I need to see him do that a few more times before I start getting sold on him. But it's a good sign to start. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, we're not gonna assign this guy as the opening day starter next year. But it's for a guy that people just wrote off because of he did have a lot of struggles to come out strong is a good sign.
Absolutely.
You know, by the end of the season, maybe he hits back to struggling, but he really looked good today, and that's what you want to see. Lopez struggled yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that was an example, I think, of just maybe a slow start. And Lopez, he's a guy who I think is going to be a solid middle of the rotation guy. He's going to be good enough to be an above average pitcher. He's not going to be fantastic, but he could be a very solid middle of the rotation guy. So I don't think one start is going to really get to him too much. The weather wasn't good. I think he will pick it up in his next start, but you know, you could at least say his first few innings were good before things kind of unraveled.
Yeah. Lopez, you know, he had a lot of good starts last year, and then hit a rough patch. He ended at the end of the year on a positive note. But again, he's a guy with a lot of talent. We saw he went, you know, had we showed really good stuff, had an extended lull where, you know, it took him a while to work out of it. But then by the end of the season, he got out of that funk and looked good. I mean, we saw it firsthand with the Cubs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, the White Sox, you know, didn't open the season great, and we didn't think they would. But there's definite signs and there's definite positive things to look forward to as a White Sox fan. Something you can actually, you know, tangibly grab onto and say, hey, things are starting to get brighter. Because once, if Yoan Moncada can, I mean, clearly he's not going to carry on like he is you know, his first three games, but if he can put up the numbers you expect him to put up, and then once Eloy starts hitting, man, that's a gruesome twosome to pitch to.
Yes. Yes, it is. I also think a positive that the Sox can take away is, wasn't a big sample size, but you saw your new closer, Alex Colomé, in a loss. I think it was the second game of the season, but he had a really nice inning, and I think that was a really nice upgrade for them. So I think you could look at that positively. I think you could look at Moncada's defense over third positively. I think you've seen Tim Anderson make a few nice plays, botch a few plays, but you've seen him have some nice solid at-bats and hit a few doubles. So I think that's another positive you could take away there. My main thing with the White Sox is their lineup going to be consistent enough? And I still don't think that defense overall is going to be very good at all.
Colomé actually has appeared twice. Two innings, no hits, no runs. Yeah, so yeah, that's positive. You know, today as a whole club, the White Sox had 9 strikeouts and 1 walk. Yeah, so that's that one walk.
There you go.
One is an all right number. I can handle 1 walk.
I'd love a guy like him on the Cubs right now.
Somebody that has 1 walk?
Someone that could walk only 1 walk. Walk the walk, but not walk the walk.
Yeah, we want them to reverse the walk. So don't walk the guy. Yeah, the White Sox, yeah, the one total walk today. 5 yesterday and 3 the day before. So yeah, the White Sox in 3 games have less total walks given up than the Whites or the Cubs did yesterday.
Oi.
Total.
Oi.
Yeah. So still we're still in March baseball. It's just, I didn't want to have to be this frustrated in March baseball.
I know. I feel just so, so weird talking all angry and frustrated right now. It's just, but you know what? Let's move forward, I guess. You know, hopefully the Cubs pitching can get together. Hopefully the Sox will continue to show some promise with some of their young guys. I think that you've seen enough promise so far in a number of them to at least feel good about that, even if you lost the first 2 or 3 to the Royals. But I think that it's only going to get better from here. And let's hope Atlanta and Milwaukee doesn't completely destroy us.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Watch the Cubs just go to Milwaukee and just pounce them. Wouldn't that be great?
I would take it. I would much rather have them get their asses kicked by Texas, but then kick Milwaukee's ass than the other way around. I think most of us would.
Yeah. But hey, fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, there's not much to talk about. Blackhawks is they're not going to make the playoffs. And it's official that the Bulls will have no worse than the fourth best odds to win the draft lottery. So they
fingers crossed,
they can't move to the fifth worst because Atlanta as a, it's a mathematical impossibility, but they can still catch Cleveland and the top or the team with the three worst record teams all have the same odds for the draft lottery for the NBA. So the Bulls still have a chance to get into that bottom three. So here's to you. And when you have your whole entire starting team, shelved for the rest of the season, you can sure lose some games. So we need a, what we need is the Cleveland Cavaliers to go on a nice little win streak here.
Yeah, because it seems like a number of our Bulls players have a case of tankyitis.
Well, the thing is the players don't seem to want to tank, but and, you know, as of what we saw last year is Garpax is like, all right, well, if you players aren't going to tank, we're going to bench everybody.
Yeah. Remember Robin Lopez didn't play like at all last year.
Like towards the nobody end. They were like, yeah, you know, it's campaign time. And you know, this year we've got a bunch of like, there's guys that I've never heard of. I'm like, where did this guy come from?
One guy named Lemon. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah. And, but you know, the Bulls, if they can catch Cleveland, they'll gain an extra 1.5% of getting Zion.
Fingers crossed. And Zion is now out of the tournament. So my bracket is, done.
So it's funny. I'm only like, I'm in this giant pool. There's 130 people in it. So the winner gets like almost $1,000.
Oh, wow.
And my one friend won it last year. He didn't watch a single college basketball game. And this year he's third. And he still didn't watch a game of basketball. And I'm only like 8 points out of first, but I'm tied for 66th place. So everybody else sucks. We all suck, but we're all bunched in this, our suckitude.
You have to leapfrog many people, as we say.
Yeah. So it's really, and I had Duke winning it, so not going to happen, but it's funny. There's one guy who entered four times. I don't know who he is, 'cause there's a lot of people. He entered four times and all four of his teams or his, all four of his brackets are tied for like 119th place. Goodness. I was like, did you put four of the same bracket in?
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know who that guy is, but he clearly didn't diversify his brackets.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, the only thing I have left to talk about is I wrote an article that I posted today about the Bears. And, you know, really the only two major holes that they still have left to fill are edge rusher. And now with the Jordan Howard trade, which we'll talk about in a second, is a running back position. And, you know, because the running backs you have on your roster are Tariq Cohen, who, you know, he's fantastic, but he's not a feature back. You can't put those miles on him because he's not a big enough guy to absorb that kind of punishment. You've got Tyquan Mizell, who is not a quality NFL running back. And I think most Bears fans would agree on that.
He's a practice squad depth guy.
You've got Ryan Nall, who for a guy that size catches well, he's just a between the tackles brute running back. Like he's like a poor man's Mike Allstott. So I just don't see that, how that fits into what Ryan Pace is or Matt Nagy's trying to do. And then you've got Mike Davis, who, I mean, I'm, I, he's all right, but he's not going to be your featured back. I think he's a really, really good number three back to have in this system. So you still need a featured back. And I'm fine. Jordan Howard is not the answer that you wanted. And there's a lot of people that are just really, really mad about that Jordan Howard trade. And honestly, I don't know what you were expecting, because we all liked Jordan Howard because he did some good things on a really bad team. But honestly, if you looked at him statistically, he wasn't that good, and he didn't fit in the system we were trying to run. And while I do agree that a good coach should make do with the talent he has, if you have all of the talent to go one direction, except for one guy, you're not going to cater to that one guy. You're going to cater to the talent that you have on the rest of your team.
I still argue that they could have kept Jordan Howard and kept him in a certain role, because he did prove his worth in certain roles, like first and goal, or if you needed a first down, if you're 3-1. But it was pretty clear that this was going to happen, and you knew you weren't going to get a lot. I didn't think it was going to be as low as it was, but I didn't think Jordan Howard was, in the end, going to give you a big return. I mean, he's a guy that, while he proves his worth on the field, he's easily replaceable. There are tons of running backs like him and tons of other running backs who can do more with versatility, like Tariq Cohen, and that's probably who they're going to replace him with. I trust Ryan Pace. I knew this was going to happen. It's still not my favorite move, but I do get it to an extent, and I'm not going to fret on it too much. Part of me is still a little sad, because I really did like the guy, but that's business. I'm just going to trust he knows what he's doing and hope that he plans to draft another running back in this draft, because Mike Davis and Tariq Cohen, I think you can do better than that. And that's why I do think they are going to draft a guy. And I'm going to assume that they have their eyes on certain guys, that they do their homework. There's no real reason for me right now not to trust Ryan Pace. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
So I was just sort of looking at it, and who knows? Ryan Pace is a hard guy to read. I felt some of the previous Bears GMs were much easier to read. But the only thing I could say is Ryan Pace is going to address both positions, the running back and the edge rusher.
Biscuit, knock it off!
And, but there's two names in free agency that are a bit curious. Like, they have my wheel spinning of that could fit into what the Bears are trying to do. The first one is TJ Yeldon, who I liked coming out of college. He's got some speed to him. He can catch and he can run. So he might be a fit especially when you are going to utilize. So here's the thing, is I think what this running back is, they're going to split time with Mike Davis. Tariq Cohen is going to be utilized in a lot of different ways. They're going to flank him out. They're going to, they're going to use him for some, first down and third downs in pass catching situations. But the bulk of the running games are going to, or the running plays are going to go to this, whatever back they're going to bring in to replace Jordan Howard and Mike Davis. But they want somebody in there that could at any point run or catch the ball. And so I think TJ Yeldon would fit that. The other one is a guy that Matt Nagy coached in Kansas City, and Spencer Ware. Both guys are in their mid-20s, so they're not old. And they have not gone in that first wave of free agency. So I feel like they can be had at a lot cheaper price than some of the other running backs have gone. The other option is drafting, and there's not any top running backs in here. There's no Todd Gurley's in this draft, but there's a bunch of interesting mid-round guys. And four who I just tossed their names out, I think could be interesting in that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears went that direction. And these are guys that could be drafted anywhere from like the third, fourth, or fifth rounds. So where Bears actually have draft picks. Miles Sanders from Penn State, who replaced Saquon Barkley. David Montgomery from Iowa State, Bernie Snell from Kentucky, and Karan Higdon from Michigan. Like, any of those guys are mid-round guys that I could totally see the Bears picking up, and they all have good hands, fairly good quickness, and are big enough to be able to carry a lion's share of the load if need be.
Yeah, you've done more homework than I have, so I'm going to trust your word on that.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting because I can't ever predict what Ryan Pace is going to do, but I just know he's going to address this. He's not going to go into training, you know, within 1 week of the draft, because if they don't draft somebody, then they're definitely going to sign somebody for agent. They're not going to go in with this crop of running backs. I can right. promise that. The other position that the Bears. Let's first talk about the trade. So the Bears traded Jordan Howard to the Philadelphia Eagles. And here's the thing is I don't know what everyone thought Jordan Howard was worth, but a running back that's coming off a down season that is a really one-dimensional kind of running back that needs a lot of carries, that is making $2 million and on the last year of his contract in today's NFL is not worth a whole lot of money, because especially when the Rams just signed a guy off the street and he played really well last year at the end of the season. So you got a 6th round pick. It could move up to a 5th round pick. And I think it very likely will move up to a 5th round pick. And I think I said, you jump at the opportunity if you can get a 4th rounder for him, but you probably get a 5th rounder for him. So, you know, really, I don't know what we were expecting for Jordan Howard. The only thing that sucks is the picks are right. next year. They're not for this draft. So next year, the Bears have quite a bit of draft capital. They'll have 2 fourths. They'll have 2 seconds, likely 2 thirds, 2 fourths. 2 seconds, 2 thirds, 1/4, 2/5, maybe 3/5, 1/6, and 1/7.
That's pretty good when you don't have a 1st rounder.
Yeah, and especially since one of those 2nd round picks is going to be the Raiders, so it's going to be like a late 1st rounder anyway.
Exactly.
If the Raiders do what we expect the Raiders to do and the Bears win the Super Bowl, really, it's just they move back a couple spots.
When you said when the Bears win the Super Bowl or if the Bears win the Super Bowl, I just heard your meatball come out right there.
My meatball will always come out when the Bears are good. It just flows like the salmon of Capistrano.
He
was a guy that didn't fit. You could send him to another team, let him do what he's going to do there, and put them in a predicament of if he does okay, you know, let's say he rushes for 800, 900 yards, what are they going to do with him? Are they going to try to sign him for some astronomical amount of money for 4 years? That's a position the Bears, I didn't want them to be in. And, you know, now they'll likely either sign somebody to a fairly long contract or they'll draft somebody where they get 4 years of control at a cheap cost. It sucks. I like Jordan Howard, but I hope he gets to the playing time in a system that better fits him than he was going to have here.
I just cringe knowing that when we play the Eagles, he's going to have like a 100 plus yard game and 3 touchdowns.
You know what's funny? I was saying that this morning. I was like, you know, that's what's going to happen. But what are the odds that Jordan Howard is going to do that with Akeem Hicks hanging on his back?
Because we always find a way to do that with former players or old washed up players.
Yeah, it's really
he's gonna like lube himself up and just bounce off Akeem Hicks every time.
Like a greased pig. Yeah, I'll run him trying to catch him. Just like read.
He's squealing too as he's running, just
they got him mic'd up and that's all he's doing. And they're like, what is this, a bad feed? No, sir, it's a good feed. It's the best feed we've had all season. He's just squealing like a pig. But the other position that the Bears are, I feel like is a glaring need is, we've talked about it before, is edge rusher. Right now they've got, they're set at their starters with Leonard Floyd and Khalil Mack, but the backups right now are Kylie Fitz and Isaiah Irving. And if you look at the percentage of defensive snaps that they played last year, is Leonard Floyd played 75% of the Bears snap and Khalil Mack played 72%. So two guys that you don't have under contract right now in Aaron Lynch, who you very well could bring back. He has not gotten a lot of interest so far.
No, and the Bears still have some space to work with.
Yeah, and Sam Achu, who they parted ways with, those guys combined for 36% of the defensive snaps. So you lost 36% of your defensive snaps that you need to replace. I mean, with Fitz and Isaiah Irving, I think you had a total of like 13% of snaps, something like that. So are those guys going to step up and, you know, quadruple what they have, like, you know, taking their own load plus the load of the other guys? Or are you going to bring in somebody? Going into this free agency period, there was a whole lot, a surprising number of quality edge rushers that were available in free agency that you don't usually see this kind of numbers. But the Bears, you know, sat back and most of those guys have gone. So you're sort of sitting here with the options of, are you going to re-sign Aaron Lynch, which is a possibility because you can get him for a cheap deal because he was coming off a prove it deal and he looked okay. You know, he looked okay. Nothing great, but knows the system. But then again, his former defensive coordinator, the one who lobbied to bring him to the Bears, left the Bears and has not brought him with to Denver. So maybe he's not the option that you want. So, but Aaron Lynch is out there. Are you going to try to find a guy who had a lot of promise coming out of college and maybe hasn't materialized in the NFL? Somebody like a Shane Ray or Coney Ealy, and figure, all right, well, you put a good defensive line with them in a good scheme that they can produce better. Maybe you take a flyer on a former double-digit sack guy who's at the twilight of his career, like a Connor Barwin. Do you take a flyer on that, or do you try to draft somebody? And this is where it got interesting, is I said it before, but I actually pulled statistics. I said that, you know, you don't usually find in third, fourth, fifth, sixth rounds where the Bears actually have draft picks. You don't typically find, good edge rushers. So I pulled the statistics of, the top 10 sack leaders for each year for the past decade. And unsurprisingly, is 39% of the top 10 sack leaders are very high first round picks, like top 11. 60% of the top 10 sack leaders over the past decade have been first round picks. another 10% were second round picks. Another 10% were third round picks. 10% were fourth round picks. 3% were fifth round picks. 2% were sixth round picks. And one of those guys was a first round talent that fell because of character concerns and some off the field issues. There was not a single seventh round pick, and there were 5 undrafted free agents. So really the Bears are not in the position of drafting a very likely, quality edge rusher being in the third round. So either you're going to burn that it's going to be a high third rounder. So really you're looking almost like a fourth round. So, only 20% of, the top 10 sack leaders over the past decade have been fourth round or later. So it just, for me, I feel like you may draft somebody there, but you need to fill that hole with somebody that has played in the NFL that you can see that translation a little bit better.
Well, I mean, going into this offseason, we knew that we didn't have a lot of draft picks. So you could go multiple ways with drafting guys, but it's lucky that we don't have that many holes to fill.
No, I mean, the thing is with when you're a good team, the way you stay a good team is you draft for future need. So if you know that your cornerback is going to have a contract due in, after the upcoming season, is you draft or 2 seasons out, you use one of your draft picks later on to draft a replacement so you can groom them into that position. Or if they don't pan out the way you want, you can double dip and get another player at that position. So you're not ever forced to go out and pay a player that you don't want to pay. And you're paying your own players, once their rookie contracts are done. That's usually the recipe for winning teams. But, the Bears still have some holes to fill, and they're getting to that point where they can start drafting for the future rather than for the now. But this is the year where I think they still need to draft some needs, and some of them are backup, and most of them are backups. I think running back is I call it a pseudo starter because we're not in the position of like Dallas or the Rams where you have a guy that, or the Giants where you just give that guy
right
90% of the snaps. We're like most teams in the NFL where you feature 2 to 3 backs. So it's like a pseudo starter for running back. And, we're looking for somebody that's going to take a third of your defensive snaps as an edge rusher. Cause it's a rotational position. We need somebody that's going to be, predominantly used there. So it's, we also need guys that probably won't see a swing tackle, things like that where they don't play unless you have injuries.
Right.
So they still need to use some of this draft capital. And here's the thing. Ryan Pace has shown he's very aggressive in the draft.
Yes, he is.
So what's to say that they won't use some of their 2020 draft capital to move up in 2019?
It could happen.
If they see somebody they want, they very well could. I mean, Ryan Pace has very clearly said that they are treating this draft like they have a first round pick and a second round pick because they said things do happen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, almost expect the unexpected with him, as we all say.
Yeah. I mean, if he falls in love with a guy, he will go after him and do his best to get him. So.
Right on.
But I don't really have anything else to talk about. Not sure if you do.
No, not really. I'm going to relax the rest of the Sunday night before I go to bed, maybe watch an old movie and move on from that awful implosion of pitching this past weekend.
Yeah, hopefully when we talk next, we'll be in much better moods because, you know, the Cubs will have gone through and mowed down the Braves and, you know, monster stomped on the Brewers. That's the hope. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please follow us on social media at ChiFanPat1 and Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. Hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or the TuneIn app. And your homework this week is to share this podcast with at least one friend that listens to Chicago sports. That's how we grow the show. Again, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bad.